Welcome everyone to Know Thy Brand podcast, the branding podcast for women in business. Welcome everybody to Know Thy Brand podcast, a podcast that tackles gender inequality through the brand lens. From brand strategies to marketing tactics, from female leadership to female entrepreneurship, from corporate brand to personal brand, every episode is designed to inspire you and to support you in a journey for success, whatever success means to you. Hello, everyone. Today we have with us Chin. Chin joined us from Malaysia, and I can't tell you how excited I am to have her with us today, because Chin is a very successful entrepreneur. She is the founder and CEO of PictoChart, which I discovered back when I started as a consultant a few years ago as an infographic maker. But Chin will tell you much more about it, because there is a lot happening behind the scene and soon to be launched. So welcome, Chin.
Hey, Julia, it's so good to be here.
Thank you so much for accepting to be with us. Before we start, I just want to tell to our audience how we got to know each other, because I think it's a really, truly inspiring story. Because when I first started when I transformed my company from a traditional business to a social enterprise, obviously I faced a lot of cost, and I also had to let go clients because they weren't fitting anymore, the purpose of the company. So there were a lot of changes. And amongst this, I decided to cut a few of my costs. So I look at all the costs I had and things I might not have used in the last few months. I was like, okay, I need to let go. PictoChart was one I decided to let go. And I had this feeling that it was not the right decision, but I did it. I was like, okay, I need to do it. I need to cut costs, fine. And then I received an email saying, oh, we are sorry to let you to see that you're going. Would you like to tell us more? Our CEO would like to talk to you. I'm like, wow, I never seen that. Like such a personal approach from a CEO for each individual client that might be leaving or not. And that's how we start talking with Chin. We got to know each other. She gave me all the time I needed to reassess. She said, oh, don't worry. I totally understand why you want, you need to leave. By the way, I'm back because obviously it was just a question of transitioning. Now I'm again a client of PictoChart because it's an incredible platform. But I wanted to tell you this because it's very unique to see a CEO of such an established company to take the time to talk to people that leave and really understand why they're leaving, not putting any pressure whatsoever, just really understanding what was the reason for leaving. And so giving the chance to a company to improve. So really, really impressed. And that's why I then invited the Chin. I think she has a lot for us to share. So Chin, can I ask you to start a little bit telling us about your background and explaining what PictoChart is?
Sure. Yeah, Julia, I love that story. And that's also why, I didn't even hesitate like coming on on Know Thyself because of that particular reason. We love our users and we really listen, into them and lean in. And my, like you said, my email, my calendar is actually open to the users. I started by studying psychology, actually. And then I went on to a very short stint in an investment bank. And afterwards, I did marketing. And then I started PictoChart. So it would look like a very random series of events. I still look at it back and I think it was quite random, but I do see two threads in my entire experience that kind of held everything together. One was that I'm infinitely passionate about people, and that also shows like PictoChart itself, we care a lot about our users, and needless to say, we actually care a lot about our people as well. So I've always strived to, build an organization that was more like people-centric. And then today, what PictoChart is, like what you said, Julia, we started off as an infographic maker, but then we morphed more and more into, visual communication, more about business storytelling. Now, the word storytelling means it's all human. Again, it's all about people. When you are creating a pitch deck, to convince somebody, there is a human element. You can show as many impressive numbers as you want, but the story is the part that, you know, kind of really links everything together. So I think that's kind of my background, and everything that I'm doing, it's really a lot about human, like about people. Now, the thing and the problem that PictoChat's trying to solve is that we know that a lot of the people, the business professionals that come on board to create any form of visuals, whether it be infographics or presentations or reports or proposals, posters, whatever, they all know what they want to say. They have the data, you know, they have the words, they have the concepts, the bullet points, they have all of it, but they may not know how to say it. And that is where PictoChat comes in to basically help them out with, you know, whatever they're struggling with. And that's the problem that we're solving. So yes, we started off with Infographics Maker, but now we've gone a little bit broader in the sense, like we're no longer just looking at infographics, because an HR person could be coming in to create a report because they want to justify more, you know, spending on learning and development. They're trying to get more budget. So again, everyone is there to try to communicate either a concept, or they're trying to convince somebody to change their mind with either data or words. And then we become, you know, the tool for people to do that.
Fantastic. And we will go back to the storytelling in a little while, because there is a little more to unpeel. But before we go any further, can you tell us when you started PictoChart and what prompts you to start this, to become an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I kind of have two very important moments that got me to become an entrepreneur, and then later on how we discovered PictoChart as an idea. So the first one was actually I was in my job, corporate, and I was very, very burnt out. Nothing to do with the fault of the organization, but more myself. Like, I just had very high expectations and I was unable to adjust. I felt like I was a failure and that I kept failing, basically.
Really?
And then, yeah, and being unable to, you know, reach the standards that I was hoping to myself, I resulted into like terrible burnout. I was actually, I went through a surgery and I was hospitalized. And then afterwards, like bedridden. So I was prescribed bed rest for about 3 months. So that was like, that was a turning point for me, because I was in my early 20s when this happened. And that's why when I, you know, when I recovered and I thought about, well, what do I want to do? Because I obviously can't stay in bed forever. between looking for other organizations to join, and at the time there weren't many, this was about like 11, 12 years ago, I think. So I thought like, maybe I'll just start a business together with my husband. So then, you know, that's how we started. But we didn't start off PictoChart immediately. What we did was we consulted also. So we did, we built Magento and WordPress like websites for clients all around Malaysia. So then I was looking for clients and I was studying more about, you know, digital marketing, like content marketing. And then I realized this whole thing, this whole content marketing is going to become bigger. Like today, we wouldn't realize it because, of course, every organization knows that you have content marketing, but not so 12 years ago, roughly. No, that time was the age of the golden age of like click-through rates and, you know, paid advertising. Like everything was an advertisement, a TV advertisement here, advertisement everywhere. Today, it's very, very different. So like that was the time I studied it. And then I realized that what is going to accompany content marketing is actually going to be a lot of visuals, like a lot. And I thought infographics would be great because they are highly shareable. They're very, very visual and they help to condense, you know, or make something that's very complex into something very simple. So that was, you know, how we, how my husband and I basically found the idea of PictoChart. But it was only after about a year plus of doing our own consultancy practice that we came across the idea, and then we started building it basically.
I remember those times because that's what actually what got me back into marketing, because for a while I focused only on branding. And then because I was tired of the constant, the old fashioned marketing, just buy from me, buy from me, buy from me. And when content marketing came along, I was like, oh, finally a form of marketing that resonates with the way I am as a, you know, as a professional, as a person as well. And so I must have met you at the very beginning of your journey then, because it was 8 years ago, 8 years ago when I started. So if you were to share with our audience, maybe two or three, the main challenges that you had at the very start and how actually you overcame these challenges.
Yeah. So I'll begin to say, I didn't even know what I didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I remember when I was back then studying for exams, and there were like those papers when I'm like, I have no idea what I don't even know. Like, you can't even be scared because you don't know what you don't know. And I felt like for us in like, you know, becoming new entrepreneurs, that was exactly it. Like, we didn't even know. Like, we didn't know about like SaaS, you know. I didn't know what SaaS meant. I didn't even know that finances in SaaS was completely different compared to like, you know, normal brick and mortar companies. There were just too many things that I didn't know, from finance to hiring to culture to, you know, like strategy and like execution, product management, like it's just, and product design, and then user experience, and then you have customer experience. I mean, like, it goes on and on, and it was just too many things that we didn't know. So I actually had to overcome like my lack of knowledge and experience actually as an entrepreneur. I read a lot of books. I also networked a lot. So I pitched everywhere I could find as an entrepreneur that would help us to basically get validation. And actually it worked, because in those days, it was still quite an early stage of startups, even in Silicon Valley. Like, the only accelerator at that time was Techstars and Y Combinator. That's it. Like, so it tells you how early, you know, where we are even from this. But it helped us to get validation, some amount of PR as well, because there were press and they were always covering this type of events. And I got a lot of feedback. And then we talked a lot with our users, and basically we kept iterating and building the product. And I think that strategy worked at that time, like this many years ago. Of course, today, if I were to try the exact same thing, I think it would fail, because the market's a lot more sophisticated and people expect something already like really refined, you know, from the first prototype of SaaS. However, I also want to say that by having books and the internet as my mentor, it was actually, as our mentor, it was actually very misleading, because I found out that I didn't, you follow the herd mentality, right? So you just like, whatever the books tell you, whatever the internet tells you, you try to do it, and then, you know, you see what happens and it works. I didn't even know that it was okay to bootstrap a business, because at that time, it felt like the only way you can grow a startup was by raising a ton of venture capital and then to, you know, go really big. So I spent like the first about 2 to 3 years being quite distracted, actually, like, you know, thinking that I need to raise money. If I don't raise money, we're not successful. Even though we had a lot of money actually in the bank and we were profitable, but then I didn't know that it was, you know, like, it was okay to not raise funds. Like, I could have taken away that distraction. And everybody around me was like just saying, yeah, you've got to raise funds, otherwise it's not, you know, it's not how you grow. So I felt like there were, like I said, there were just too many things that we didn't know. And I didn't even know like which path we want to take. The bootstrap path is very unique. Not for every industry, not for every company, but I felt that for PictoChart, it's the right choice. We're still bootstrapped until today. And
can I stop you? Because not everybody knows what bootstrapping means. So I think if you can explain.
Bootstrapping would mean that you start a business and you don't get any form of like money, you know, external money. Like, in other words, like a loan, you know, or you did some debt equity, or you raised some funds from venture capitals, or basically there are tons of ways of getting money. Anything that isn't your friends and family and your own savings basically counts as not bootstrapping. So PictoChart, until today, we still have not raised capital, and we've been 10 years in the thing. And that's why I said, like, I felt that not knowing and being very inexperienced as entrepreneur, we spent a long time trying to figure out who we want to be, how we want to build the company and all that, which I felt could have been avoided, you know.
I think it's very important you mentioned this, because, as you know, I also teach at university, and we speak specifically about how you start with your financial capital. So where do you find the capital for your business? And you can find it externally or internally. And a lot of people are afraid of the internal part, because they say, well, I only have so much money, how can I grow? And of course, it's a different journey, because it's completely different if you manage to raise a lot of money. But then, as you say, the attention to raise that money and also the control that you have on your company is very different, because obviously if you get investors, for instance, they have a stake on your company, while if you bootstrap, it's your business and you decide everything. It's not right or wrong, but as you say, you need to find what works for you, not just follow what everybody else tells you to do it. So really great tip. Thank you.
Yeah, no, Julia, I think you said it correctly. Like, don't just follow whatever everyone else is doing. So in the Valley, especially when I visited it, it's like everyone has this stereotypical, like, this is a profile of an entrepreneur. She or he hustles a ton, you know, like works until like from 9 until, I don't know, 12 midnight, 6 days a week. Like, that's that stereotype. Like, even when I visited the Valley, like back then, I still did until the pandemic actually. And it was like, you fall into it, you know, you feel like you have to hustle. You feel like, yeah, like this path of bootstrapping isn't viable and all that. And it took me a while, like, to realize that every entrepreneur has their own path. They have to discover that path and the journey. And then, you know, then they have to also be able to connect that, you know, to the vision that they have. So obviously your ambition and everything, like, it all, yeah, when you do it retrospectively, then you'll be able to figure out if you need the finances, you know, to do that, or are you able to keep going, as well as the team size. Like, there's just so many things. Like, we're a 4-day work week company, and there are tons of things that we wouldn't have been able to do if, you know, if we had raised capital. So
I'm going to tell you one story. I don't know if you know, but, you know, when you say that when you're bootstrapping, actually, you probably don't know, but when you say that you're bootstrapping, and the fact that you need to find your values and your, you know, what is your company about and what you stand for. You know, Neil Patel is one of the guru. Yeah. I've been very lucky because I've been featured by Neil Patel in one of his articles about bootstrapping specifically. Do you know why he took of my article? The infographic that I made with PictoChart about your values. And this is this was not planned at all for the audience to know, but it's true. There is an article on where he has taken a part of the infographic I made with your platform, where I was explaining how to build a brand, and he put it in his article because that connects three things. One, the fact that bootstrapping is a tactic. B, that you really need to know who you are, and so. And the fact that visual is a great way to express a content or a message. Yeah. And that's why he chose it, probably, rather than a long article or something like that. So there you go. PictoChart made it to Neil Patel.
I love it. So send me the article. I'd love to celebrate also, your success of getting, like, featured in that article.
Yeah, I'll send it later. Okay, so this is one fabulous tip. Anything else, or any other challenge that you want to share with our audience?
There's just like I mentioned, like, way too many things that we didn't know, like, including how to build a team, you know, and how to hire, what kind of people we needed. And it was just like, a lot of it was like trial error. And then we kept learning as we went along. I think it was also the lack of mentors almost in my space and in what we did. Like, in Malaysia, we have a lot of very, very successful entrepreneurs, but very few of them, if any of them, actually are in SaaS. SaaS stands for software as a service. So we're it was difficult for me to actually find mentors, and I had to travel like very, very far to like get inspiration and learn from people who, you know, who've been there, done that in the SaaS space. Yeah.
Okay. Has there been like a moment where you're like, yes, we really are getting where I wanted to be, or something like that? Or like that moment of celebration of your what you've achieved so far?
Yeah, so actually it's very early on when that happened. I felt that until that moment happened, I was still thinking, maybe we had a consulting practice, you see? So we had a consulting practice, and then we had PictoChart, and we were building it as a side project by this like agency, more or less. And we went on, so I remember it quite distinctly. We launched around February or March of 2012, where we actually monetized it. So it wasn't just a better product, but it had a proper like pay $9.99 or something, you know, like to make use of the pro features and things like that. And we were surprised that not only people paid in the first day, like there were actually people paying the first day. The numbers kept growing on its own. And we, you know, I didn't have a dedicated marketing person until probably the end of 2012. So like, you know, for a year plus, it was just me like writing blogs and pitching here and there, like doing whatever I can, things that don't scale basically. And then we started seeing traffic like really grow. And all of this was organic. That was like, meaning we did very little. And that usually implies a form of product market fit. So that in other words, the product has found a market that is excited about it, and they would, you know, genuinely keep using it as well as like telling people about it. And it was a great validation. So the time that this happened was around August or September of the same year of 2012. Yeah. So that was very, very early on that we were like, okay, I'm sure. And then by the end of that year, I was already beginning to scale down all of the other client projects, and we were preparing to basically shut down the other business. But it took us a while actually to you know, finish up all of the clients' projects and then move the people over. And I'm very happy actually that I still have a couple of people who were hired part of the agency, the first like web consulting practice. And they're here with us after 10 years. Like they're still here with us, which is nice. Yeah.
So I think that the, from everything I hear is that for you, the team is a very important component of the success of your story, because before we were talking, you were telling me how, you know, you're planning around their holidays, like you're planning your business around when people, in consideration of the fact that there was COVID, what they might want to use, take their holidays. And that is so important. How do you select your people? Is there any tip you can give? Like, how do you go about growing your team and choosing the people for your company?
Yeah, this one's tough. I'll say that even right now, I'm still learning as I go along. What I've found is that every single year or every single person that we hire, I always say this, they need to be better than us, which then, you know, basically means, I mean, if you logically just think about this, it means that the first and the earliest hires are probably the worst people because every single year's hires is like getting better, right? But we also try our best to help the people who are within the organization to grow. And as we keep interviewing people, then we make sure like, okay, what, you know, like this is right now the standard of a lead or a manager or something. Yeah. So then we kind of get an understanding about where we need to be. But in general, I always say this, like we need to hire world-class, you know, and the world's best talent to be working together with us, but not in the US, because right now we have the Asian time zone, we have the European time zone, and if we had the US time zone together, then we'll basically not be sleeping, like none of us, because our meetings would be like 24 hours if we needed, you know, to communicate. So we've chosen only from the Asian and the European time zones. And I would say like right now where we're at with the team, I'm very happy. It's a very small team. We're only about, we're close to 40, like close to 40 people, but we're like, it's tight-knit, you know, everyone knows each other. There's a lot of trust. There's people are all remote. So we look for our hopeful values. We have certain core values that we look for. So they need to be nice people. I mean, like just to say this in general, but they need to be very competent as well, like very, very experienced people. So the other thing for us is that because we're remote and we're 4-day work week, which means we cannot spend a lot of time in meetings. We cannot spend a lot of time like guiding the person, you know, hand-holding a person like what you should be doing. And that's why most of the hires these days, like we have not hired anybody less basically than a senior recently. Okay. Just because, yeah, it's the nature of the business. We require more experienced people. The earlier days of VictorChart, we didn't do that. So we hired fresh grads, and then we had an office back then. So we put everybody together and we trained them up, but that doesn't work with a remote environment. So we're very deliberate. I literally built a hiring strategy, you know, like almost like, kind of the same thing we do for VictorChart. Who are our target customers? Who is not our target customers? Who would want to buy us? This group of people wouldn't want to buy us. And then, so we have that. And I did the same thing for hiring as well. So we have a very specific target audience, a specific group of people that we know would be a very good fit for VictorChart. They'll be happy here and we'll be happy with them. But for the rest of the world, even though they're remote workers, they may not be very happy working at VictorChart. So we've identified that very, very well now. And also in our, you know, like not yet the job descriptions, but in our communications and all that, we try to emphasize on those parts, like what are the things that, what are the things that would attract someone to us. Yeah.
I love it. I love the word deliberate. You have a deliberate strategy, which is not always the case, like especially starting up, as you said, you're starting with a fresh graduate, but then there is a time where you need to change strategy, because otherwise you just take people, and then there is a lot of cost in training people. And I love working with young people, so it's not about age or quality or experience necessarily, but Well, even if you decide as a strategy to take young people, you need to take less experience, because everybody might have a different, but you need to be deliberate in your strategy, not just go, today I take this person. No, take the cousin of the, the cousin of the friend of, I think that's a very, very important tip. Thank you very much. But so Victor Chart started very strongly, found his niche immediately, found you were very able, very good at identifying a need that was about to come in the marketing sphere, jump on it, create your business, and it was fantastic. As a user, I can tell you that with absolutely certitude. But then competition got fierce, because as you said, now everybody does content marketing. Big competitors came. And so when you faced, and I don't think there is any problem in mentioning one of your biggest competitors is Canva, which offers infographics on top of 3 million other things, because they are a massive, huge company with a lot of finance support. Obviously, that was a challenge for PictoChart, because all of a sudden there is a new player and the player is massive and has resources that you might not have. So what was your strategy? How did you pivot to face this challenge and still being relevant?
Yeah, I think, to be very honest, when Canva first came out, and I think this was in like 2014 or something like that, when they, started going live, we didn't even really see that much of an overlap, because in the sense and I always use this analogy, I felt like Canva is trying to cover everything of design. And I mean, recently they got into videos and things like that. So it's like they really cover the A to Z of design, right? And while we kind of do just a small subsection of the alphabets, but we do it very, very well, and we cover those cases. So case in point, just, kind of like anybody who wants to check this out, infographic templates, check them out on Canva, check them out on PictoChart. You're going to see a very different type of depth in the templates themselves. Because for us, we research every single topic, like when it comes to, business operations, you have a process or whatever, they are very, very deep. Same thing with like proposals or presentations. Like we're not creating templates, they're really very, content rich. So for us, again, it goes back to, first we, in the beginning, we still didn't quite get that people would start to compare us, together with Canva. But after a while, when we realized that, okay, this is really happening, then we realized we do need to defend our niche, because we knew that our ambition from day one was not to become the A to Z of graphic design, And then we went deeper, looked at the customers who were still with us, why, they stayed with us, what exactly is it that they are attracted to PictoChart. Then we realized that all of these people, again, like I said, they have a longer form visual to try to communicate. They have an infographic, they have numbers, so they need better charting tools, they need tables, they need they just need a lot more flowcharts, diagrams, etc. And that was when we were okay, we do need to shift, even though in terms of product we've started out and always remain an infographic, but we need to shift our value proposition, the way we're communicating everything, even to the users, so that they would get very, very clear signals. So anybody who wants to you're looking to simplify, complex information, come to PictoChart, because we probably can handle that very, very well for you. If you had a complex pitch deck or something, lots of concepts that you need to explain or numbers, we're probably a better place. But if you need marketing materials, logo, business cards, all this kind of things, then I think Canva is actually better. So I with our team, we've just said because we're smaller, and anyway, when we started out, we never intended to be that A to Z of graphic design. So then what we need to do now is to make sure that, we communicate that very, very clearly. And then we ensure that the parts that we cover in storytelling, we go really deep, so that for these people, the consultants, the people who need diagramming, flowcharts, charts and all that kind of visual metaphors and all that, they would come to PictoChart. PictoChart's going to be a better solution for them. But only for that subset of users and a subset of use cases. So for the rest of it, if you want the broad, create more eye candy marketing materials and social media stuff, we're not going to be the best solution for that. So yeah.
You have no idea how much I love this, because I often talk to my clients and members actually, and then they often are afraid to take this approach. And when you say, okay, who you want to target? I want to target everyone. And I want to be the best at everything. And actually, that is not the best strategy, because being everywhere, I always say, means if you target everyone, you're actually in competition with everyone. You know, mm-hmm. And unless you really are the best, you know, that is already complicated. But on the other hand, if you really focus on your niche, and I love how you said we listen to our customers, we look, so you really got deep and say, okay, let me understand of what I want to achieve, what the picture chart is and what they need. Okay, where is that niche that where I can be really the best or the most suitable solution for my target audience? Who is my target audience? What they need? And honestly, from a brand, as a brand strategist, this is what we preach all the time. And it's difficult. What I love is the fact that you're proving that is the right strategy. Because for you to go head to head with Canva would be crazy. Like, and
yeah, we need $400 million.
Yeah, exactly. But what for? Trying to cut the marketing, splitting the marketing out between you and them? I mean, honestly, while you found your niche, you found your very specific, unique strength where people come naturally to you because that's what they need. And I can tell you, because obviously I also use Canva, I use both. And it's exactly what you say. If I need something designed, simple, whatever, okay, Canva, fabulous, easy. But when I need something that where I need really to create a story, to tell a story and with more sophisticated elements, of course I come to you. But for me, it's easy to say because I know you. I've been knowing you for a long time. But for someone that doesn't know, and also in other fields, like you are just an example of what people can do in other fields. And it works. Mm-hmm. So I really hope that our listeners will take note of this because it is scary. It seems like counterintuitive. Why? Are you telling me that I need to go to scale down instead of fighting? No. You don't scale down. You just focus. It's a very different value proposition. You just focus. So that's brilliant. Yeah. And so tell us a bit more of what picture chart looks or is going to look like tomorrow.
Yeah. So we're, in order to strengthen more what we're talking about, we've already started adding on, like we have certain things like, you're able to add on list repeaters, we call them, like automatically you're able to add on like timelines and all that, like we call them design components, but we're making it much better so that they work like almost like just plus a button, and then you can have an additional like list and repeater. But basically all of the features that we're working on, whenever you can think about storytelling, so whatever you need in order to help you make wonderful diagrams, like I mentioned, flowcharts, not just charts and maps, which we already have at tables, like we already have, but we're improving them, we're making, we're adding on integrations, we're making it even more intuitive. Like if you had to constantly create reports and you pull from, I don't know, I'm just pretending, Google Analytics, right? Like for your clients, then you can have that integration ready so that you can visualize all of these things in a very beautiful report, like easily. So we're just going deeper and deeper into the whole storytelling part. And on top of that, also trying to, trying to see how we can work together with like some advocates and people who are already working a lot with PictoChart, like even yourself, so that, people can get inspired. That's one of the things that we realized, that people, they care a lot about being inspired because they know what they have to say. They just don't know how to say it. And that's why we provide them inspiration. PictoChart has been like through the templates and everything. But then we felt that by having a community around, people who are already naturally creating a lot of PictoCharts as well, that is also going to be very powerful. So we're working on several of these things, but basically going deeper and making sure that people understand that we're more about storytelling than we are as an all-in-one, design. But I see that the comparison between PictoChart and Canva has gotten a lot less now, which is good because like
exactly.
They're beginning to tell that there is a difference, and they're like, oh, well, if you need like social media, you probably shouldn't try PictoChart, like go, like to tools like Canva, etc. But then they know that when you have something like a proposal, something like a, an infographic that you need to do, like PictoChart's a better one. And that's what we want to succeed in terms of branding and positioning. So
that's fantastic. I honestly, as a brand strategist, this is music to my ear. And so as we talk about brands, I have really last question for you. And it's about a brand that means something to you, your favorite brand or a brand that you particularly like. and why?
Yeah, I think recently, so maybe a bit cliche because it's like a tech brand. I thought about like, you know, taking something that's non-tech, but I'll go with tech. I recently was reading a lot about Notion and their success. They just raised like...
Sorry, which one?
Notion. I don't know if you know them. They're like a note-taking tool. People compare them to like Confluence, you know.
It's very tech. Like,
yeah, it's quite tech. Like a wiki, you know, like almost like a wiki, yeah. But not a lot of people are using it right now. And then I was really impressed that they grew from like 5 million users, they said earlier this year, to 20 million users, all organically. And guess where the users came from? And that was the part that shocked me the most. Like, I didn't expect it. It was TikTok.
No way.
Yeah. So TikTok, and you should check out Notion because people use it like a wiki, you know, like I need to create, I don't know, documents and just how to get more internal alignment, like all the projects that you're working on, timelines, etc. My one of my product managers uses Notion quite a bit in the company. So they weren't even intentional about it. It's just that the product itself is so versatile and likable and simple that they basically had their users just create all of this like crazy, you know, like TikTok videos, like everyone showing off, like, look, I just found this new tool. And a lot of them students, by the way, because, you know, TikTok is like a much younger private audience. And they kept showing off to their friends. And that resulted, like, I just did a quick search just now on the Notion hashtag, and it had like 8 million plus posts, you know, on, on Notion. It's crazy. And they didn't even do anything. So, like, for them, like, what I really am impressed about the brand is that they compete in a very saturated space. Their competitors are like, you know, like almost the size of like Microsoft, you know, it's tough, but they managed to not only find their own sweet spot from a product perspective, but they also made the product so beloved that people just automatically flock towards them. And they're all trying to like creatively figure out like ways to automate and make things like simpler using Notion. And I think that's beautiful that they focused a lot on product and differentiation on their strategy, and they kept executing really, really well. And they just naturally like amassed their own, you know, group of like fans and evangelists. And I think that's one of a very, very great like success story for tech. And they started up very small as well, but they kept getting so much of attention that I think they had no choice but to raise funds because every investor was knocking on their door, like they were doing so well. So I think out of all the brands, I felt like this one did it well. It was organic. They relied on a really strong product so that it would automatically generate a fan base, and it worked. It paid off very, very well.
Wow, thank you so much. This is something, it's so interesting to speak with someone that is in a different sector from what we usually do, we cover. So today we learn about SaaS, we learn about Notion, we learn a lot of IT tech stuff. But I think it's very important because we do, you know, startups are not just a consultancy as you started, but you can really expand. And what you have given us is incredible, honestly. So many tips, so many things that I hope it will inspire future entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs of today. So thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And I will put all the links to PictoChart and everything we spoke in our notes.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Julia.
And stop.